Good morning, welcome back to Nach Yomi. Today we're going to be concentrating on the 11th perek of Sefer Shmuel Aleph. So just to put ourselves into context, Shaul has been made king, but not everybody is so gung-ho about it. Not everybody has respected Shaul, and Shaul has been quiet. He didn't respond to those naysayers. He hasn't a chance to prove himself. This perek, today's chapter, is where Shaul proves himself. So here's what happens. In the meantime, on Cross Jordan, so we're talking about East Bank of Israel, we're talking about where Jordan is today, there is a peaceful city called Yavesh Gilad. They are attacked or surrounded by the Ammonites, the Ammoni, with a king called Nachash. Very interesting name to have for a king to have. He surrounds them, and because he is militarily overpowering them, they said, look, we don't have a choice, we'll cut a covenant with you, whatever you want. And he's a particularly cruel person, so he says, no problem. He says, just, I want everybody's right eye as well. So slice out your right eyes and become our slaves, and then everything's fine. So in this predicament, they don't know what to do. They said, look, give us 7 days, and maybe we can work out something. And Nachash, obviously chortling to himself, knowing that there is no one who can possibly save them militarily, you know, says, go for it. You know, take your 7 days and see what you can muster up. In the meantime, what they do is they send a messenger across the river to the newly inaugurated Shaul HaMelech, and they say, look, this is our predicament, we're stuck, in order to even create peace, we have to, you know, cut out our eyes, it's a terrible place to be, what do we do? So at this point in time, the Ruach Hashem descends upon Shaul HaMelech, he jumps into action, and he takes a Tzemed Bakor, a team of cattle, and he cuts it up into pieces, and he sends it all to all the 12 tribes. And he says, if anybody decides not to listen to me, to come to this call of battle, I will slice them up like I sliced this Tzemed Bakor. And everybody comes together. 300,000 soldiers come from across Israel. Even 30,000 from Yehuda come together. So we talk about a colossal gathering of all the Shiftei Israel under one king. And he sends a messenger to Yavesh Gilad saying, tomorrow at noon, we're going to be there. Yavesh Gilad start rejoicing. The next day, in fact, battle goes out and they destroy. They literally destroy the armies of Nachash. They didn't, meaning to say that there weren't even two people left standing next to each other. A complete victory. In the meantime, what happens is after this victory, it becomes evident that Shaul HaMelech is Shaul HaMelech. This is not somebody to doubt. And so now that the wheel of fortune has shifted in his favor in power, so some of his people say, you know, Shaul, Miha Omer. They turn to Shmuel, actually, and they say, Miha Omer Shaul Yimloch Aleinu. Who are those people who are doubting if Shaul should be the king? Tanu lo ano Hashim ani misayim. Now we're going to kill them. Meaning there were people yesterday who didn't believe you, Shmuel, that Shaul should be the king. Now's the time to exact judgment. We're going to make an example of those naysayers. And Shaul intercedes. And even though he rightfully could have stood up, he intercedes and he says, no, nobody's going to die today. Today is a Yom of Teshuas Hashem Yisrael, of God's salvation. He doesn't allow it to happen. And so therefore, in the wake of that, Shmuel says, let's go back and to Gilgal, which is really the sort of starting place of the entry into the land of Israel, just by the Jordan, and let's renew the kingship. So it didn't seem to, wasn't as strong a start of an inauguration. He's shown himself now, let's restart it again, and this is exactly what happens. Very short, very succinct perek. Few things to notice when we were going through it, a few points to ponder. Why is it that Nachash chooses to attack Yavesh Gilad? Well, on a geographical perspective, it's pretty obvious, because Yavesh Gilad is on the east bank of the Jordan. The Ammonites, of course, are on the southeast side of the Jordan. So they're neighbors to the Gilad territory, which is controlled by Manasseh. So that's on a geographical level. But if you think about it more deeply, there actually is a greater connection, a greater reason over here. Remember when it was when Binyamin was in the end of Sefer Shoftim, for those who are part of this, the Nach Yom at this point in time, if we go back, there was an attack on the tribe of Binyamin. Binyamin was almost completely obliterated by the Shvatim in civil war. There was only one city, one group of people who did not wage war against Binyamin, and that was the city of Yavesh Gilad, and they were punished duly for it. It is interesting that the fight which is picked over here with the newly minted anointed king from Binyamin is with Yavesh Gilad, his perennial ally, the brother of Binyamin, Menashek, from the tribe of Yosef. Now, Yavesh Gilad did not want to be part of those attacking Binyamin. Will Binyamin come to his aid at this point in time? That's the question that Nachash is posing to him. If we follow this through in Tanakh, there are many other instances of this very special and unique connection. We're going to see later on that at the end of Shmuel Aleph, when Shaul HaMelech is killed, and he is hung from the ramparts of the castle of the Philistines, it will be the people of Yavesh Gilad who will remove his body in respect to bury it. There's going to be a lot of connections between these two entities, Binyamin, specifically Shaul HaMelech, and Yavesh Gilad. So this is number one. As you see, this is not just a random assortment. This is almost like throwing down the gauntlet, and the question is Shaul going to respond? And yes, he does. Why? Point number two to ponder. Why is there Shaul HaMelech is using this particular sign? He's slicing up this cattle in order to bring everybody together. It sounds dramatically like, if we go back to the end of Sefer Shoftim one more time, I apologize. Just we have to see the interconnectedness of all this information, of this story. What is Shaul doing? Like the Pilegesh, like that woman was sliced into 12 parts and sent to all of Israel, brought together around a questionable cause. There was truth to the cause. How far they went was too far. Now, with Shaul HaMelech from Binyamin, rallies everybody together. He cuts up a cattle and sends it and brings everybody together. This is the rallying point. This is the king. This is the rectification of that civil war, which is happening over here. There's 300,000 troops and 30,000 from Yehuda. Total 330,000, which is 70,000 shy of what the battle Pilegesh Begiva. In the battle Pilegesh Begiva, Israel lost 40,000. Binyamin lost 25,300. It's almost the same amount as the remainder of what is pulled together for this battle. This is a greater tikkun. Question, and the last thing to think about is the following. Was it a good or bad thing? Was it noble or was it foolish of Shaul HaMelech to actually disregard these people and say, you know, when he had a chance, when he came to power, and now he had a chance to exact justice on those who betrayed him audibly in the last parak, was this a correct moment to keep quiet or not? It's a debate. It's not so clear. On the one hand, Rashi, quoting Mishle, says, "Bozler eu chasar le v'ish tefunos yacharish," that a person who makes another person, disgraces another person, is considered a lacking of heart, but a person who is of tevunos, of deeper knowledge, will keep quiet, using the exact words in the pasuk used to describe how Shaul kept quiet when those were vayavazeu, when they disgraced him. Seemingly to indicate, as Rashi points out, right over here, that Shaul HaMelech was acting with greater wisdom by not exacting punishment. However, if you go to the Gemara in Yuma Daf Chof Beis Amud Beis, the Gemara says, why was Shaul punished? It all started here. It started when Shaul did not exact punishment when these people spoke out against him. So which is it? Was it good for him to keep quiet? Was it not good for him to keep quiet? Isn't this an honorable trait, not to respond when somebody else lashes out at you? Not to be a visceral reactor? So the Meiri says, the Meiri on that Gemara, comments 600 years ago in his commentary on the Gemara, yes, you know what it is? It depends what level of person you're looking at Shaul as. As an individual, that's who you aspire to be. Don't react. Don't respond. Don't lash out. Don't seek revenge. But as a king, you sometimes have to. Meaning Shaul HaMelech had not yet donned the mantle of kingship. When he dons the mantle of kingship, he represents more than simply himself as a person working on himself. And sometimes you need to exact justice for there to be a precedent set, and that is that the king is not to be messed with. The king is not somebody to be questioned. So yes, on a personal level, he was right. On a national level, he was incorrect. I have a fascinating share on this topic, and I really encourage you. I'm going to put it into the WhatsApp group just for further listening on this topic and how it relates to Megillas Esther. How somehow Esther's actions in the Megillah, when she says "Imacharesh Tacharishi," same words of what Shaul was doing over here, like Elaiz Kazos, when she turns to Mordechai, is somehow the tikkun of Shaul's national silence, not his personal silence, but his national silence, and how that was fixed in the times of Megillas Esther. More of that on the link. Looking forward to continuing tomorrow. In the meantime, have a fantastic and wonderful day.